Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
As the world's resource wars intensify, with increasing demands for raw materials coming from a developing world, those who profit from mining and harvesting from the bounty of the earth continue to use even more devastating strategies and ever more complex means of keeping it all out of sight and therefore out of mind. That strategy just got a lot more difficult. We find out why when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wildside News. I'm a visual guy. I am fascinated with the earth. I paint the earth, and I'm fascinated by the beauty and wonder, which I think so many of us are. We're intrigued by our natural landscape. It provides us so much. But unfortunately, in many areas of the country, for various reasons, the landscape is under attack. In some cases, we kind of have to tolerate that because it's just called the price we pay for progress or something. But in some cases, it really starts to get a little bit out of hand. And in the case of what we're going to talk about right now, it's really getting way out of hand. And unfortunately, what happens is people don't have a chance to really see what's going on. It doesn't get in the media that often. And even those people who come out to visit some of the devastation get a limited perspective because they're literally on the ground. Well, sometimes to get a bigger perspective, a wider vision of what's really happening, you have to get off the ground, and there's an organization called South Wings that does precisely that, and joining us now to talk about that is South Wings Executive Director Taylor Barnhill. Taylor, welcome to the Wildside News.
Thanks, Sydney. Very glad to be with you.
South Wings, tell us what South Wings does and what your mission is.
South Wings is a kind of conservation organization or environmental organization. We're a nonprofit. And our mission is to provide skilled pilots and aerial education to enhance conservation efforts all across the Southeast, hopefully to assure that the air is clean, our forests are healthy, the rivers and streams are clean, and that our communities are sustainable.
Now, how long have you been in existence?
About 8 years.
Discuss your membership, because you have a rather interesting group of folks who participate and help support your work.
We do. Now, and technically we're not a membership organization, but we have a lot of other organizations and individuals who partner with us to support this aerial education and monitoring activity that we do. We're part of a large network across the Southeast of other conservation organizations primarily, including some university research organizations, and also a network of pilots who love to fly. Our pilots own their own aircraft, and they're always looking for a good reason to get up into the air, and they also love the earth and their own community, and so they have volunteered to fly for South Wings in partnership with other conservation organizations to monitor what's happening on the ground in places that are often behind locked gates or simply inaccessible from the ground.
There's another group, Lighthawk, that is doing a similar mission. Great people. And I have so much respect for what you guys do.
South Wings was actually founded by a former Lighthawk pilot. Hume Davenport lived out west. He was a Lighthawk pilot for several years and loved doing the work, but he was originally from Chattanooga, Tennessee, and wanted to move back home to Chattanooga. He did that and thought, well, why don't I ask around and see if there's a need for a Lighthawk type function in the Southeast. And people jumped on the idea, and that was the birth of South Wings.
I didn't know that. That's a great connection between Lighthawk and you folks and your work. Talk about some of the things that you've been doing in the last 8 years. What are some of the highlights literally highlights of your work.
I think the most active area of work is with the riverkeeper groups all around the Southeast, whether it's the Atchafalaya Basin Riverkeeper down in Louisiana, or the Altamaha Riverkeeper in the coastal Georgia area, or the French Broad Riverkeeper here in our area in western North Carolina. These tend to be the groups that benefit the most and have the most immediate benefit from aerial monitoring, largely because you'll be out in a fairly rural, remote area following a river corridor, and there may be an industry or some kind of other activity going on in that river corridor that is either illegal or not in the best interest of the ecology. And you can only gain access to these areas from the air. You could travel in a boat, but it could literally take days to get to some of these areas. So a 45-minute flight often provides the kind of information that might take many days by boat for these riverkeeper groups.
And obviously from the air, it's easier to spot these point sources of pollution and contaminants. Have you seen some of those yourself?
I have. And it's always a shock. Our mantra, as it's shown on our website at southwings.org, is, "I had no idea." And that is the exclamation that comes out of almost every passenger's mouth as they come off the plane. They literally had no idea of what was going on to the landscape, because these are things that are out of sight and usually out of mind. And fortunately, most of our passengers carry cameras and can take some good aerial photos and get those back to the state regulators or to decision makers and begin turning things around. I've seen down in Georgia was probably the most striking perspective on river pollution. We were flying the Altamaha River, and in a very remote area, forested landscape as far as you could see in every direction, and there in the middle of the river was this huge plume of foam, this dark gray foam, and then a black plume of some kind of liquid, probably 60 feet across, flowing down the river. And we traced it back up to a local paper mill, and they had a large pipe, I don't know the size of it, probably 3 feet in diameter, that was underground, running through the forest, running under the water in the river, and came out in the middle of the river. And they just dumped their effluent there.
Thank goodness for you guys, because it became obvious.
Yeah.
Now, you're not really the activist group. You assist environmental organizations and others. In that particular case, whatever you can share, what then was the result of discovering that?
The Altamaha Riverkeeper, James Holland, was on the flight. And when he got back to his office, he got on the phone and began talking to the Georgia state regulatory agencies and let them know what was going on, emailed them copies of these aerial photos so that the evidence was undeniable. And in many cases like that, James is able to bring about either a citation being written toward the company, or if it's sedimentation from a construction site, the state might go in there and order them to stop work. But in most cases, James is able to get things to stop, get the bad activities to stop right away. So it can be a very gratifying and very effective tool.
I can imagine at times when you're up in the air, you're seeing things that your mantra, "I had no idea," you really weren't intentionally looking for something and have come across problems.
Exactly. I can remember a flight on the way to one part of the state to work with a Forest Watch organization, and we happened to fly over a highway's construction site, and there was a very significant plume of sediment washing from the construction site into a local lake. And as soon as we got on the ground, I called one of the local conservation organizations and let them know, and they were able to get a hold of the state DOT right away and get that stopped. At the same time, we're able to send an aerial photo so that there's no question that this is a significant activity that's going on.
Well, one of the one of your activities recently that I became aware of was your work in terms of working to unveil mountaintop removal mining, which is happening in primarily coal states. And the name itself is rather interesting, mountaintop removal mining. This takes the concept of strip mining and cubes it. I have to assume that a lot of people really aren't quite aware of the effect of this, because it's possibly carefully orchestrated not to be accessible, let's say, from roadways and things. Am I being at all accurate about that?
I think you are. When you're in the community below these mine sites, there'll be a narrow corridor up a typical Appalachian hollow, a creek valley, and you'll see the trees continuing up the side of the mountain, and then there will be this sharp edge where the trees simply stop. And if you're from there, you know that that mountainside used to continue up another 1,000 feet or so. But because of the way the forests lie in these valleys, you cannot see from the ground the mining activity up above that tree line. And it is often very extensive. Some of these mine sites are thousands of acres. They're often the size of cities in their extent. And the only way to really see them, to get a sense of the scale, and to also understand the amount of destruction going on, is to be in a small aircraft above them.
When people go to southwings.org, they have access to some of these images, but I think some of the best images are actually available in a group that you're working with. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. One of the best photo collections from these aerial flights is on the website of the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, or OVEC, and their website is ohvec.org. And if you go to their website, there's a button you can click on for their photo gallery. And it gives you an idea of the scope and the extent of some of these mine sites. The being out of sight, even local people often don't really know what's going on, but they know that their water has gone bad. They know that the air smells of sulfur and is full of dust and coal dust. And they know that there's this continuous sound of heavy equipment going on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But even many local folks have been unaware of the extent of it, and they're often shocked when they do get into an aircraft and fly over it.
That is really shocking, that local people in their communities, they've lived there, their families have lived there, in many cases going back many generations, are watching their natural landscape being destroyed out of sight, and they're paying the consequences. When you get up into the air, give me a sense of what you see, the extent of it, and how it makes you feel when you see what's going on.
Well, I live in a mountain region south of the coal fields in western North Carolina, and everybody who comes to this region loves these mountains. Anybody would love the mountains in say, West Virginia, for example. It's this beautiful, continuous, rolling landscape of native hardwood forests, southern Appalachian hardwood forests. These coal sites, you'll suddenly see in the distance this big bare area, and if people can imagine your favorite set of green rolling mountains and draw a line halfway down the side of that range of mountains and remove all of the mountains above that line and take the rock and the boulders and the gravel that used to be that mountain top and push that off into a valley and fill the valley with 1,000 feet deep fill of boulders and gravel that has no ability to create topsoil or nutrients. Any rainwater runs straight through. You're burying trout streams. You are creating basically a desert on the top of a flat plateau that goes on for miles, thousands of acres. They can barely get some exotic grasses to grow on it, but it's permanent deforestation. It will never support a forest again because there's no soil hydrology available. And the total loss of streams is about 2,000 miles at this point of lost streams because they've been covered.
That's extraordinary. How is it that they're able to do this? Do they own these lands? Have they leased these lands? I mean, you would think that the public would somehow have access to some of this, but what prevents that from happening?
Well, there's a lot of question about the mineral rights versus the property rights of landowners.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you have a piece of property, and this property's been in your family for four generations. It came down from a great-grandfather. Say it's 200 acres of beautiful hardwood mountain land. And whatever that 200,000 or whatever that acreage might be worth, let's just for argument's sake say it's worth $200,000. And overnight, the value of that land has gone to zero because of the mining activities around you. So your family inheritance is, which is in many cases your retirement, the retirement of all of your family, and many other heritage values for your family, is suddenly worth nothing. These people are often forced off of their land because of it's not worth anything, but also because of the bad air, which is causing serious health problems, and the list goes on and on. So you have a phenomenon of the coal companies being able to come in and take this land from people at a very low cost. We have an activist that we're working with right now who has fought all of his life to save his property, and he's just gotten a notice from the state telling him to vacate his land, that they're going to condemn it because it's unsafe. Well, the safety of it is a direct result of the mining that surrounds him, yet the state is willing to go in there and have him leave his own property that's been in his family for many generations. It's an incomprehensible situation for thousands of families all through the coal region.
As we look out into the future here, are there any breaks that can be applied to this? Otherwise, what we're looking at is, I mean, once this starts, it's going to be really hard to stop the expansion of these sites. What's the outlook for that region?
Well, there's a lot of laws on the book that would protect communities and families, but they're not being enforced. Some of the coal executives admit that they're breaking the law. They don't intend to follow the law, and they're going to continue doing business as usual. If there was something that might happen, if the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act were enforced, a lot of this activity would at least slow down. Unfortunately, 3 years ago, the Bush administration rewrote the rules within the Clean Water Act that redefined what fill material was, allowing the coal companies to cover these streams up indiscriminately. Before that happened, coal was selling at $22 a ton. The profit on a ton of coal was about 80 cents. Now coal is selling at $65 a ton, three times as much, and the profit is $20 per ton, compared to 80 cents per ton. So the rewriting of those rules has been the incentive for the coal companies to pull out all the stops and to move ahead as fast as possible. I mentioned these green native hardwood forests. These are mature oak trees and other hardwood trees that cover thousands of acres, and the rush for getting the coal out of the earth is so fast that they don't even harvest the timber for lumber. They simply cut the trees, bulldoze them into the ravine, and burn them. And just, you know, just the waste in saw lumber alone is unfathomable.
Well, this to me is one of the worst nature environmental stories that I think exists in the United States right now. We have a real struggle going on here between forces of profit and people. This is not going to stop. When you have profits increasing from, as you say, it's a great, great statistic, 80 cents per ton to $20 per ton, that's a lot of profitability. Because these devices, these huge machines that come in there and scoop these things out, I don't know how many tons they're able to scoop out with every scoop, but it's a lot of money that they're able to make. What's your take on this?
It has to come from the citizens of this country. This is something that is fundamentally un-American, and I think people have to become aware of it. And when they are, the average American is not going to stand for it. These are their fellow Americans that have been here for many generations and have worked hard. Most of these people being impacted have worked as coal miners themselves back before machinery took over. And it's going to take the American people standing up and saying this is not right. And one of the things that we at South Wings are able to do is to get those aerial images into publications like National Geographic and recently Vanity Fair magazine, Oprah's O magazine, the New York Times. Getting these images in front of thousands of people is beginning to shift the attention, and there's some changes that are just beginning to happen, but we have to stay on top of this and keep getting these images in front of the American people, and they will stop it.
When you say staying on top of it, that's exactly what you do with South Wings. You bring this to light. You bring it to the public's attention. You bring it forward. Nothing works like the images themselves, because the truth is the images are the truth, and we do need the truth. And you do it. South Wings does a terrific job. For people who want to learn everything they can about South Wings and become informed and help support your efforts, what's the best way for them to do so?
Our website address is southwings.org. If people would like to email me directly, it's taylor@southwings.org. I'd be happy to respond. And just continue looking at some of the other organizations like the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition and their work. They're doing heroic work to stop these activities. I also encourage people to go see An Inconvenient Truth, the Al Gore film about global warming, and it helps us understand the role of coal in global warming.
Taylor Barnhill, Executive Director of South Wings, southwings.org, thank you so much for your extraordinary work. You're an excellent spokesperson. I commend you for everything you do.
You're very welcome, Sydney. Thank you very much.
We all have to do what we can to take back America. And this week, activists from many stripes came together to commit to doing just that. When we return, Robert Redford talks to you on what it's going to take when your Voice of the Earth returns here on the Wild Side News.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.